Welcome to the V-Wave Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by River Runners for Wilderness and is created by a cast of river lovers who understand the river resource comes first. On the shoulders of a healthy river, do we recreate ourselves? What comes second is river access, a very thorny V-Wave, all in itself. The V-Wave discusses these things and river ecology, recent river trips, river history, river management, and new changes on rivers. Have a topic you'd like to hear more about or help discuss? Get in touch with me, your host, Tom Martin, at rrfw.org. That's T-O-M-M-A-R-T-I-N at rrfw.org. Special thanks to Char and Trev, who came up with this idea. Welcome to another V-Wave podcast. Today is Thursday, August 24th, 2023. Today's guest is Dr. Matthew Arnold. And Matthew just completed a Grand Canyon River trip, and I'm going to ask him a bunch of questions about it. So Matthew, how are you today?
Oh, I am doing so well. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I'm looking forward to it.
Great. What was your launch day? When did you launch?
We launched July 18th again of this year.
Okay.
18 days on the river.
Okay. 18 days to Diamond Creek or off to Pierce Ferry?
So, of course, it's during the summer, so you're only allowed 16 to Diamond. So we took out at Pierce.
Great. Okay. And do you know roughly what your flow was?
We had incredible flow. High was around 19,500.
Okay.
And the low was in the low 17,000s.
Okay.
So not the typical quote-unquote tide that you see at these higher flows, which was great. When you have large flows, it can make you think twice about certain campsites, and we didn't have any of that.
Super. Did you get your orientation at the ferry the day before you launched or the day of launch?
We actually got our orientation the day before the launch. As many of you know, there is a new Grand Canyon River Ranger, Jen Hogan.
Okay.
And it's really cool. Everybody loves Peggy. Peggy was incredible at her job, and I always liked talking with Peggy when I was out in Leeds. But Jen herself is a search and rescue backcountry ranger in the park, which a lot of people know. She has done a lot of exploration in the park, and she's also a river runner.
So not just a lot of exploration. I'm going to jump in here and say, hasn't Jen Hogan walked the entire length of the Grand Canyon from Lee's Ferry to Pierce Ferry?
She has. In fact, she was the first woman to do so. And this isn't piecemeal like a lot of us Grand Canyon hikers. She did it in one continuous through hike, about 1,000 miles. She was telling.
So she wouldn't be the first woman to do it because other women have done it, but I think she was the first to do it solo. Wasn't she?
Solo, okay.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So she knows the resource.
She knows the resource intimately well.
Okay. And she's done the canyon on the river too.
Correct.
All right. And so she gave you the orientation the day before in the afternoon. Was there another trip launching with you?
Luckily, we were the only launch on July 18th.
Okay. All right. And do you recall some of the main points that that Jen Hogan was trying to get across to your group?
Well, I think that the biggest point is this aspect of leave no trace.
Okay.
I think if I were to give you the 30,000 foot view, it was Jen's perspective on leave no trace.
Okay.
And somebody who spent so much time in the canyon, I really appreciate her perspectives on leave no trace. And I would say that the river orientation was leave no trace from the perspective of river running.
Okay.
What does that look like?
Okay. Can you cover some of that?
Sure. So as a river runner, we are responsible for several things. We're responsible for collecting all of our human waste. Everybody knows that, the famous Groover talks. But Jin went into some detail about how to do that effectively. Things like, you know, maybe not use a lot of toilet paper every time you go down the canyon or every time you use the restroom. Then talking about the importance of the kitchen tarps and making sure that there are no holes in the kitchen tarps.
Okay.
As we want to leave our beaches crumb-free to prevent things like rodents, to prevent, you know, other unwanted critters using our remnants as food. It protects the fauna out there.
Right. To try to keep the ant population down for sure in the summer.
Exactly.
And the mice population.
And it goes right up the food chain.
Hmm.
So, and then to prevent the ringtails. And then, of course, other larger fauna from inhabiting those areas.
Okay.
What else was covered? There was some conversation about what the day-to-day looked like. On our trip, we had a few new folks who had never been on a river trip before, let alone the Grand Canyon.
Okay.
And I think Jen did a really good job at kind of talking about what maybe a typical day might look like as a passenger on a Grand Canyon riverboat.
Okay.
And which I think coming from the ranger at Lee's Ferry maybe hits a little bit different from the trip leader and the ways that they might say it for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Feels more official at least.
Yes, definitely. When you have a representative of the Park Service talking to your group, that's a precious thing. It's a time to learn about how the park sees the resource and specifically the park's concerns and protection for the resource. Do you remember some of the things she talked about in that day-to-day, this is what it's going to be like for the new folks?
Well, for us, specifically, we were right in the middle of a really hot 2 weeks. So the average temp for our first 6 days, the average high temp for our first 6 days was no less than 120 degrees Fahrenheit.
My.
So because of that, making sure that we do things like drink plenty of water. That we interact with water, that we take care of our feet. Tolio, because in the summertime when it's so hot, you spend a lot of time in the water, taking care of your feet when you are not in the water to make sure that they don't dry out and become a petri dish for the bacteria that live in the Colorado River is really important. But things like, okay, there are a number of things that we have to do during the day. So I guess when it came to the specifics of how you do things day to day, Jen didn't really get into the specifics, but just understanding that there's a lot of things that need to be done day to day as far as setting up a kitchen, setting up a bathroom, setting up your bedroom. So on our trip, we joked that rafting the Grand Canyon in some ways is similar to recreational moving, where you take the entire house and you move it downstream. And I think if you have a good trip leader, you can make those aspects of rafting really fun. And recreational moving can be a good time.
Nice. Yeah, because every day, you know, you've got to load the boats in the morning. And every evening, you got to unload the boats. And the next day in the morning, you got to load the boats. And in the evening, you got to unload the boats. And it happens, unless you're doing a layover and not going anywhere. every day, like you say, it's bathroom, kitchen, bedroom. All that's got to get set up. All that's got to get taken down.
Other things that that Jen talked about. So something I didn't know about the park is almost 100% of the bats now are testing positive for rabies.
Okay.
So if you have a bat encounter, that is a bat touching your person that you are supposed to in-reach the park, and that is grounds for a evacuation.
Okay.
So that was surprising to me to learn
So that's a bat touch, not a bat bite.
Correct.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, the way that I understood that. Something else I have an in-reach and I carry an in-reach, and I think they're getting more and more common on the river. When you hit the SOS button, that does not mean the Park Service is going to rush out in a helicopter and collect you. But what that's going to do is make sure that they have somebody who will start a conversation with you.
Okay.
And so I guess I really appreciate that perspective, as I've never hit the SOS button before. And having somebody who's been on the other side of receiving that SOS button, like Jen Hogan, again, she's been search and rescue ranger in Grand Canyon for, I believe, 7 years now, and just what that dialogue can look like. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if I was just learning that, if there's anybody else who may be listening to your podcast is just learning this today.
Yes. So tell me about InReach. What is it? How big is it? What do you do with it?
Yeah, so InReach is about the size of one of those. It's about the size of your cell phone. There are a couple of different options. The smallest one is about the size of a credit card. And the larger ones are about the size of your cell phone. And what this does is it's a satellite-based text technology.
Okay.
Most of them, I understand, are made by a company called Garmin. You can then have a subscription. The cheapest subscription is about $15 a month for 10 text, or you can get unlimited text, depending on how much you use it, for about $60 a month.
Okay.
Now, what this enables you to do is to use texting via satellite for anybody above the rim, so to speak, in this context.
Okay.
However, there is an SOS button which will send your specific in-reach to the emergency companies, whoever that is, who's ever close, and then they will begin a conversation with you in order to determine what type of help is necessary for you.
Okay, so when you push the button, it does not scramble a helicopter, as you say. You have to kind of look at the thing and then see an incoming text which says, hey, what's up?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
so they know whether or not, should we just send one helicopter? Do we need to send multiple helicopters? Is this something that you aren't sure of and you just wanted to talk with an emergency response person?
Okay. Cool. And did you have multiple in-reaches amongst your group on your trip?
We had two in-reaches.
Okay. And that I think is kind of neat, because then if you break into two groups and the park says you can't, you know, break into two groups, you certainly can't send anybody ahead to get a camp. But if you have some people hiking a loop hike somewhere and some people not, they can stay in touch.
Exactly. In fact, we used that. We had trips walking out and trips coming in.
Okay.
And so this allowed there to be interaction at camp in case something happens. You know, it was really hot down there in the summer. And just to make sure that everybody could be clued in. Oh, hey, it's actually going to be later than expected. We're going to hang out at the Wallapai Gardens. Because it's too hot, we're going to sit here, cool down, relax, wait till it gets a little bit cooler this evening before we walk down,
okay,
for example.
Cool. So this is a way for the people on the river to communicate with inbound or outbound hikers during exchanges. Very nice.
Yeah, in addition to all the ways that you said, you know, if you are trying to do like the Thunder River hike, for example.
Okay.
And, you know, you thought it might take 3 hours and it's taking 5 hours because you had a nice little cool down once you got to the top.
Right. So the folks with the boats or people that are, you know, going up into Deer Creek Patio or hanging out in that area can know where the hikers are as they make their way from Pete's Creek down to Deer Creek.
Exactly.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very fun. All right. Before we leave, Jen and the orientation there at Lee's Ferry, is there anything else that she mentioned that you want to mention?
I guess that the conversation left me with a sense of real excitement to explore the canyon.
Cool.
And more than the specific things that she said, it was her excitement about the place that was quite frankly contagious.
Nice.
And I think that that sense was felt by everybody in our group. And I think there was an aspect that said, okay, yeah, I'm excited about the things that all of the big stops that the commercial companies might hit, but there might be some really cool things that are off the beaten path, and it's up to you and your own adventurous will in order to explore. And that for me was the real juiciness that I got from her talk.
Cool. Very cool. So roughly what time did you guys get away from the ferry then on your launch day?
So from the ferry, we launched right at 10 a.m.
Okay.
Yeah, right at 10 a.m. We had a morning, again, many new folks, first time on the river. So we wanted to make sure that we were rigged to flip.
Okay.
And starting day one, I wanted to make sure that everybody's boat was solid, with start good habits right from day one. We knew that we were going to go to Badger, which Badger in recent years has become a rapid that if people go into that hole, has the absolute capability of flipping an 18-foot raft, no questions asked.
Not recently, but historically.
Historically.
That hole's been there a long time, and it's been entertaining river runners for quite a while who find themselves drifting into it, especially sideways.
Yeah.
All right, starting good habits. Excellent. Off by 10. Did you guys scout Badger, or did you just run it?
Absolutely. Scouted Badger, scouted Soap, scouted Hands.
Okay.
And with new folks, I feel like day one, it was really important for us to figure out how to eddy out, what that might look like.
Okay.
Badger, Soap, House, those are all pretty easy places to learn how to get into the eddy, tie off your boats, and... You know, that way we're all on the same page as far as rapids and what rapids looked. Again, we had two different captains. It was their first time really being behind the oars. And so...
Okay, wait. Hang on a second. Let me make sure I understand this. So not only did you have people who were new to river running, but you had some people rowing a boat who had never rowed a boat.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, great. Super.
Yeah. One of the five boat operators had 3 days under 3 days of experience rowing a boat.
Okay.
One person had never rowed a boat before, but they had been in a paddle raft and were at least familiar a little bit with whitewater, but
okay,
not that much.
All right.
So I think that the scouts really allowed us to start conversations about how to read water that would continue through the rest of our ongoing dialogue. And, you know, when it comes to, I see so many conversations about people saying, oh, what's your line? What's your line? Well, the Grand Canyon and other rivers are really dynamic. The way that they look at one flow doesn't mean they're going to look that same way at another flow. However, if you can learn how to read water, you learn what those hydraulics look like, you could probably make informed decisions about which direction, which line to take.
Right.
And so that was really the ongoing conversation that I was hoping we could have.
And how did that work out?
It starts with coding. It actually worked out really well. You know, we get to day 12, we get to day 13, and folks that were new to the boats and to rowing day one are all of a sudden talking about the scout at Dubendorf, really in a pretty sophisticated way.
Cool.
So I was pretty excited about that.
Cool.
And then by the time we get to Lava, they are part of the conversation. That is special. That is one thing about the Grand Canyon that I feel is very special, that you have so many days back to back to back that if you're new to this, day one, which may seem really kind of overwhelming and scary, to just stay with it and the learning and education that could happen was pretty special to see real time.
Cool. So did you have any troubles making sure everyone was able to make the pull in to camp?
To make the pull in to camp, no. Let's see. First night we camped at, 18 mile ledges.
Okay.
So we managed to make it 18 miles, which at near 20,000 CFS wasn't actually that challenging.
Right. And you actually were able to drop below House Rock Rapid on the high flow. Well, of course, you guys had high flow, so it isn't like you wanted to get through that rapid because the next day the water's going to drop in the morning. It's going to be a little harder to run that rapid. Okay, very good.
Yeah. So that was a huge benefit, and I was lucky enough to also be in the Grand Canyon in December of 2022, so just 7 months prior.
Okay.
And at 8,000 CFS, moving 18 miles in a day is a much different task than when the CFS is nearly 20,000.
Because?
Well, just because of the currents.
Yes.
Because the water moves faster.
Twice as fast? I mean, it really decreases your time factor.
Yeah.
You bet.
Well, under 4 miles per hour at 8,000 CFS to, in some of our days, was faster than 5 miles per hour.
Okay. So going 18 miles is 3.5 hours on the water.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is a very different. Cool. So yeah. First night was at 18 mile. I was just trying to think. I mean, you were talking about how the people who hadn't rowed before stuck with it and were learning more and more as they went. So I'm trying to think, okay, what kind of things can sometimes fail with new rowers? And one is missing the pull-in, and we're at camp where somebody says, well, we're going to camp here. And then, you know, if you're still out in the current, you see everybody off on the side and you go, gee, I wonder what they're doing over there. And you float on past the camp. Another thing that can happen to anybody, not just new rowers, but old rowers, as missing a camp can happen to old rowers, is turning a boat upside down or getting knocked out of your boat. Did that happen to any of the people on your trip?
We did have one flip, yes. That was at Hermit this year.
Okay.
In the number 5 wave, which was huge, absolutely huge, and flipped a boat.
Okay.
Flipped one of our rafts. We had a fully loaded raft. It was cooler was completely full. We had that flipped over in about 15 minutes.
Okay.
After the boat had gone over. I think that there's a lot of people that worry in the Grand Canyon about flipping the raft and what that might mean, and that it's a huge, big problem. You don't want to flip a raft, but if you do,
right,
there are ways to right that raft that aren't all-consuming. You know, I see these posts on places like Mountain Buzz or in certain Grand Canyon discussion groups about, oh, you flip an 18-foot boat, you're going to have to bring it over, and that's a Z-drag, and that's a three-hour-plus ordeal.
Right.
And it just doesn't have to be.
How did you manage the quick turnover? What did you do?
So what I like to do is I like to, really accessible for me, is I take, I have four 15-foot NRS straps. And what I will do is I will put those four NRS straps, and I'll strap that to that frame that has been flipped.
Okay.
And then what I do is I instruct at least eight people. Usually eight people is the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
To get on one side of the tube. And two people per 15-foot NRS strap, if we get ourselves into the middle of an eddy. I like to get a boat over to an eddy. We get ourselves into the middle of an eddy, and we just start to lean back. And I think what you'll realize is if you just start to lean back and you hang in there, that that boat is at some point going to become vertical. And when it becomes vertical, that's when everybody simultaneously, I'll say, jump off. You jump off that tube, and the thing comes over.
So let me make sure I get this straight. The boat's upside down, but the frame is still attached to the boat. So you take these four straps and you hook them onto the frame on one side of the boat. So like one at one corner, one at the other corner, and two sort of either side of the oar tower where you can reach down and grab it pretty easily. So now you have these four lines coming up one side of the boat. You have eight people standing on the other side of the boat with these straps, and they lean back, and the boat slowly starts turning over. I'm assuming that that they are going to cheat up on that strap a little bit as the boat comes up and over. And then right at the sweet spot where the boat's going to fall one way or the other, you make sure it's going to fall toward them, and then they kind of push off and away, and the boat comes down with a kafump. And that's that.
And that's that.
Okay. So let's go back for a minute to the person that was rowing the boat. How did they do mentally?
To be honest, I feel like that was the most challenging aspect. The person who was rowing this boat was a veteran boat operator, and she is a very talented boat operator.
Okay.
And so when she flipped, she, I think, felt down, like she had failed the group. I think that there was some aspect of, you know, if I don't have a clean run through the Grand Canyon, you know, then that might mean something. And the thing is, it's water. Water is always changing. And I think that we got everybody to the side. Everybody was good. The person and her passenger, the person who was rowing and her passenger, were out of the water within maybe 15 seconds or so. And, you know, that it was no big deal. And I think I was maybe the on-the-water trip leader, when I kind of showed the group, hey, this is no big deal. This can happen to anybody, and we'll have the boat rubber side down. Well, I guess both are rubber side down. We'll have the boat righted in just a few minutes, and we'll be on our way, that it's not a big deal. And I really wish that that was kind of the theme for a lot of trips. I think a lot of trips go down with so much anxiety, and everybody spends all this time thinking, about lava, and it becomes almost an obsession and can maybe take away some of the enjoyment that they have in the canyon. At least that's my experience.
Absolutely.
This is my sixth time down.
Okay.
So, again, I know that many of your listeners have probably been down way many more times than I have, but at least that's what I've found in my humble experience.
Well, speaking of humility, it is humbling when one thinks one has this dialed in, and suddenly the river decides otherwise, and you're swimming, and the boat's upside down. I am curious to know, though, the steps, sort of the process it took for your person who flipped the boat to kind of get their head back together again. How did that work?
So we got the boat righted, and then we decided to just take a quick minute and have some lunch.
Okay.
Well, I will tell you that I feel lucky that the person who flipped the boat was my partner.
Okay.
And so I gave her a big hug, and I said, listen, we're all in between flips. It doesn't matter how talented you are or anybody else is. We are all between flips and pens. Flips and pens can happen to any of us at any of the time. And so it's the second or the moment that you think that your line is the best and you can't imagine how somebody's run the other line. If you think that too many times, guess what? You're going to end up in a situation. Again, rocks and water. That's really what rapids are. They're just rocks and water, and they're ever-changing. And so I think when you realize and you can appreciate that we're all in between flips and pens, that it might take some of the meaning out of it. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean that she's not a very, very talented boat operator.
Right.
Because she absolutely is.
Right.
And the rest of the... the rest of the trip, they clearly were on the board that it was no big deal, and we're all going to, and we'll just kind of move on. And I think that, you know, that is part of being the TL, is to make sure that everybody feels safe in order to have a flip or a pin, that if that happens, you're not going to be... not going to be banished from the land, so to speak.
Right, not going to be kicked off the island.
Yeah, exactly.
And it is intimidating, though, because when you flip in that area, just down the way is Crystal, and below that are the gems. And, you know, it's a journey there that means you got kicked off the horse. You got to get back on the horse and keep riding. And it can be unsettling.
In this experience, she got right back on the horse.
Okay.
Went down Crystal, had an amazing cheat to the right. Well, guess what? For the last several years, we've been going down the left side of Crystal.
Okay.
And then I think what happened is she had been used to going down left below Crystal Rapid, and ended up getting pinned just river left of Big Red, the Big Red Rock.
Oh, wait. You mean the person that flipped in Hermit now was pinned in the rock garden below Crystal?
Yep, exactly. The rapid right after.
So they went right, made the right sneak, and then tried to exit the left channel and didn't get far enough left.
Exactly.
Okay.
And there's a rock garden. Yet you can see where that Big Red Rock is, the one that's infamous for pinning boats that have flipped in Crystal Rapid. There are several boulders to the left of that that you have to get left of.
Right.
So she got pinned there and then was able to get herself unpinned.
Okay.
Incredibly. And then 2 minutes later, she got stung by a bee.
Oh my gosh!
That's a lot to come back from. That's a pretty hefty hour.
Yep.
And there was lots of hugs and support. And we went down and we stopped at Hermit and we hung out.
Hang on now. Hermit's upstream of Crystal, so hang on a second. So,
oh, yeah.
So you flipped a Hermit, ran down Crystal Rock Garden, stung by a bee. I mean, this is a lot for a person to have to deal with, but look how well they dealt with it. They were in the Crystal Rock Garden and they got off. I was like, oh, we can do this, and they did it. That's pretty damn cool.
That's right. So just downstream of Crystal, there was a eddy that we all kind of got into the eddy and just hung out for a second.
Okay.
Caught our breath. I got to say that the rock garden and getting pinned was more activating for me than anything else, because I have seen and heard plenty of stories about Big Red, of course, that famous Big Red Rock, pinning boats for days. And it's a place where motor trips can't really offer any assistance. So, yeah. And I was thinking, oh gosh, we're going to be here until the flow changes and we can somehow get our boat. But luckily, it was just a few minutes. No
okay.
big deal.
Good.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, well done. Think about kind of wrapping this up now. Is there anything else about this journey that you think is important for people to know who are getting ready to rig themselves?
Well, that you can do it. That you can do it. And I hear lots of conversation about leave no trace. And I think when you're well rested and it's day one or two of the trip, that leave no trace might be easy to achieve. And then I noticed that when people get tired, trips go on, they start getting a little bit lazy.
Okay.
I really feel like it's our job to make sure that we are good and we keep to those highest level of leave no trace principles.
Cool. Excellent.
And as a group, you're in this together. Nobody gets banished from the island. You are in this as a crew, so I'd highly recommend having a trip leader that is good at making sure everybody is a participant. There are no observers in the Grand Canyon. Everybody is a part of the band, so to speak.
Nice.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you, Matthew. Dr. Matthew Arnold, I really appreciate your taking the time to walk us through your recent Grand Canyon River trip. And please hold the line, but this will conclude this V-Wave podcast, Thursday, October 24th, 2023.